did death get just factors into just what George refers to as like the genocide of disabled people. So it's going to be a bit of a heavier topic, but I'm here and I'm going to make it comfortable for you guys, hopefully. And I think it's important for everyone to listen to. So I think first, just to make this accessible to everyone, George, could you just talk about like the intended purpose of medically assisted death?
Yes, and I apologize for going to this level. I hope I don't put your audience to sleep or get them to feel too sad. I just wanted to educate them, and that's the whole purpose of this exercise today. So the medical assisted and dying program, or MAID as it's well known as, came into effect in 2016, which originally was created for people with very, very debilitating, painful illnesses that had a really bad end, you know, Huntington's disease or advanced Alzheimer's, dementia, stage 4, you know, cancers and so forth. And that was what originally it was created for, and that's what it started out as. Unfortunately, as the years go on, the program has now been used now to... and I don't use this term genocide lightly when I say this, because there's been a lot of things historically that when we use genocide, that sometimes is is tragic. But in this particular case, now according to StatsCan, 80% of people that are using the MAID program are just disabled people living in poverty. So the fact that we've got to this point, and it's getting worse, and all they are asking for is just simple advocacy and medical treatment and any kind of support. And the fact that a country that's supposed to be as rich as Canada can't support these people, and that are allowing these people to take their own lives every day just because they just want out, they just want support, you know, and they're not getting it. I just find that hard to believe that a country like Canada can't do that. And I think with the creation of a Federal Disability Act, hopefully we can put a stop to this and make sure that all disabled people get access to basic medical treatment in this country. Even getting a doctor, as you all know, is difficult. Mm-hmm. And it's difficult if you're not disabled. But if you're disabled, it's even worse. And also, a lot of doctors won't take you as a patient. They say on their... and when you get to the front desk, if you have an ICBC claim or a WorkSafe BC claim, we won't accept you as a patient, because they know how difficult it would be having to deal with these agencies and the bureaucracy of back and forth paperwork and these agencies forcing these doctors to give them opinions that are beneficial to them, because they're paying for these medical reports and that are damaging to the disabled person or the disabled worker or disabled person of whatever ilk. And it becomes a very, very slippery slope. So the MAID program is something that I think had good intentions, like a lot of these things we're talking mm-hmm. about, unfortunately, for people that could end their suffering. But I think now it's being used as a way to just wipe the slate clean and get disabled people off the books. And we're basically called unfunded liabilities by the government, the actuary table. So basically they just want to eliminate any unfunded liability, which is what the government considers disabled people who can't work. And one of the things I also wanted to get into, which we didn't really have to, was the CPP and the PWD is the provincial disability program that we have. And CPP is the Federal Disability Program. A lot of disabled people still want to work. And they want to work, even if it's part-time, they want to contribute and do what they can to get themselves. They don't want to be at home just sitting around, just watching TV all day, contrary to popular belief. They want to actually contribute, and they want to go to school, just like you do, and want to work and have jobs. And one of the things in the Federal Disability Act that we were getting to, I should have mentioned to you before in the last segment, was in the CPP disability, so they added $200 a month more. But if you work and make more than, I think it's $300 to $500 a month, you're taxed dollar for dollar on that.
No way.
So what is the incentive for people to work if they're just going to claw it back and take it away from you?
Mm-hmm.
Because you should be able to... with PWD, you're allowed, I think it's like $15,000 a year or something like that. So you're allowed like whatever that works out to, about a month, you know, 800, 1,000, you know, whatever a month. And at least that's something to get you above the poverty line. But if you do CPP disability, the federal act, like I said, 300 to 500 isn't all that much, is it?
No. Yeah, no.
So I think that to sort of allow people to get their lives back and to get them back working again and get them back working as quick as possible, we should be encouraging them and not punishing them in taking away whatever little work they end up doing. Because, you know, like I said before, the majority of disabled people want to, you know, get on with their lives. And there is another thing, too, and I want to address this, too, is there is this stigma you see on a lot of commercials when you watch mainstream television and with mainstream media that disabled people are scamming or gaming the system. Mm. And I can put a stop to that right away. So the CBC did a story back in, I think it was 2021, where they did a study for 15 years over three provinces of workers' compensation claims in BC, in Saskatchewan, and New Brunswick. So that was probably over 1 million claims during that time period. You know how many people were actually charged with fraud in that time period?
How many?
Four. What? Out of over 1 million claims, four people, less than 1%. Mm-hmm. So there are, unfortunately, some people that do game the system, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And they should be punished for it if they are. But what happens to the insurance company when they act unlawfully, when they defraud people, when they deny legitimate claims? It's good business practice. They get bonuses for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that, you know, people should be aware of, that, you know, this is, the law should either apply to everyone or applies to no one. It can't be both.
Mm-hmm.
I like to think we're all in agreement there.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, before, when we were just talking in between songs, I think your story was really interesting in that if you like earn a certain amount of money before you become disabled, then you won't be able to get help. And could you talk a bit
about
that?
Yeah, so a lot of people like myself who got disabled on the job, the only thing we were guilty of is not that our claim wasn't legitimate, was that we made too much money at the time we, you know, injured and disabled ourselves. And so if you, for example, if you work and you had a slip and fall and you worked at a McDonald's or Walmart or Tim Hortons or Home Depot or any of those close to minimum wage jobs or Amazon, and you're going to be back at work, you're on a cast for, say, 6 weeks, you're back at work in 3 months, your wage loss is very minimal under that period of time because you're making minimum wage. Your claim almost gets auto-approved. It gets accepted. But if you're, say, a first responder, or a person who ends up making a decent living, say more than $3,000 to $5,000 a month or more, then that's when the denials of the claim seem to go up considerably. And as we've seen what happened down in the States with the United Healthcare, unfortunately the assassination down in the States with the CEO, the United Healthcare was using an AI program that was denying claims at a rate of almost 33%.
Wow.
One third of all claims. And that AI program was 90% inaccurate. They found that it was completely, and they knew it, but they kept it going because it was very, very profitable and very, very lucrative for them. So I think that that's really what all this comes down to. It just comes down to follow the money. And,
yeah.
You know, that's, you know, I understand it's expensive. I understand, you know, but it's not like this issue affects taxpayers. And I'll tell everyone why, is that these insurance companies are making billions and billions of dollars of surplus at WorkSafe BC, and they're investing into the stock market. And into the stock market goes, our housing prices go up. Why you'll never be able to afford a home, all you young people. Now you know why. Why you have trouble getting a doctor. Why there's a doctor shortage. Now you know why. Because so many of them are bogged down dealing with insurance claims and dealing with paperwork instead of actually seeing patients, which is what they signed up for. Why there's the opioid crisis. So this also ties into that as well. So why there's so many people in Maine and Hastings and all over the province that are addicted to opioids and painkillers is because their claims were once accepted. And then partway through their claim, a case manager wanted to get them off the books so they can get a bonus. So they said, okay, let's kick this person off. And then what are you going to do? You're going to go out in the street and you're going to find other ways to medicate yourself. Mm-hmm. Now, this isn't a conspiracy theory. This is conspiracy fact. There's multiple government reports that say this is happening. There's the New Directions report in 2019. There's the Paul Petrie report in 2018. And you can Google and find many other ones too. So there is a bonuses and goal sharing and gain sharing that go on to these insurance providers they get for doing this to us. So this is, again, a man-made problem. This is something that's been created by government, but they're profiting off it. So, of course, now it forces people to go on to CPP, disability. It also forces people to go on to PWD, which are taxpayer-funded programs. Your taxes and my taxes are paying for this. Mm. Why should we when these companies are making billions of dollars in surplus? They have an accident fund of over $1 billion just sitting there for this mandate to take care of people when they have legitimate claims.
Yeah, just unjust.
I also found during my travel, which in my travels, that during COVID, the insurance company WorkSafe BC and I'm not sure if ICBC was doing this too, but it wouldn't surprise me if they were kicking people off their benefits, their income replacement benefits, and throwing them onto the CERB.
What's that?
The CERB was the Canadian Emergency Response Benefit for only people affected by COVID, not workplace injuries or car accidents.
Yeah.
So the fact that they did that, it's a violation of the criminal code, corruption, frauds on the government, section 121. And it's basically the fact that nobody is investigating this. I've basically tried to bring this attention to politicians, you know, mainstream media, to police, and they won't investigate it, which is also a violation of section 139 of the criminal code, obstructing justice. Mm-hmm. So if you can't even trust your own law enforcement and Burnaby RCMP to do the job, who can you trust?
Incredibly sad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this is a really good conclusion. It gets people thinking about disability and just everything that you've talked about. And I think we're going to move on to songs and then we'll come back and do a little summary. But I obviously don't want to cut you off. We got time if you want to, if there's anything else, any more wisdom. Yeah, I really appreciate everyone who's been listening to this so far. I think this is just such important information. And it's also just, so important to know your laws and, you know, how we're being either failed by them or helped by them. But so definitely do some Googling inspired by this and talk to, you know, go to Ottawa with George road trip and figure some stuff out. But yeah, now we're just going to take a little break and we're going to listen to Sometimes by Earth Freaks. Enjoy. We got a slow intro on this song, but it's going to be epic.
Thank you. Sometimes thinking is draining. Renaissance Coffee is open at SFU. Parminder and his team have been serving the SFU community with great coffee for more than 20 years. If you're looking for a wholesome meal, delectable desserts, or something to warm yourself and lift your spirits, Renaissance Cafe is a place to be, featuring fair trade espresso beverages and brewed coffee. Renaissance Coffee is open Monday to Friday from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. Well, how do you get up and go?
Hey, so this is CJSF 90.1 FM, and it is Gnome City with Katie and George. We just, I think we just had a good conclusion on talking about just the life of being disabled in Canada and just a lot of unjustified, like, government actions. And I think, well, maybe we could do a bit of a just summary of what we talked about in case anyone's just tuning in right now, if you would want to give the cliff notes.
Sure. Basically, this may not come as a surprise to people, but there's a lot of corruption going on, not just in this country, but all over the world. But unfortunately, for the sake of our discussion here today, with a lot of things that are going on and with the disabled population and how they're rights have been stripped away and how they've been denied basic medical treatment and access to the legal system and without a federal disability act, I think that we need to restore the balance and sort of stop this disability crisis and, like I was saying before, the genocide of disabled people. And I think that the whole purpose of the exercise today is for people like yourself and hopefully everybody out there listening to just educate yourself, and you know, if you do see your politicians or people of note, to speak up and say something, because I think the it's admirable for a lot of, especially young students, to have passions about all kinds of issues that go on around the world, and advocate for human rights, and that's great, and I think that should be encouraged. But I think that people seem to forget. There are crises that go on right in front of our faces that don't seem to get addressed or don't seem to be talked about very often. And I think, again, I appreciate you giving me the time and the forum to speak out to everybody out there to allow and to just educate people to see that there is another world out there. And I hope that you never experience that world. But if it does happen to you, that you at least are ready for the battle and the difficulty that may lay ahead for you if you do have to deal with the system and the corruption that sort of goes along with it. And if you don't, I hope that you do get the proper treatment you deserve and you get back to your life as soon as possible. But for people like myself who've been dealing with this for 8 years, I know people that have been dealing with it for 20, 30, 40 years, long before you were born, and that are still at this battle trying to get, their basic, human rights. And that as long as everyone has the opportunity to speak up and say something, especially young people, because this will affect you, because eventually you get older, your body's going to break down, you're going to have health issues. Like I said, car accidents can happen to anybody, workplace injuries can happen to anybody. And it's like cancer. Everybody knows somebody who's affected by it. And I'm sure you have a family member, or everyone out there knows that they have a family member, somebody who's been disabled on the job or injured by a car accident, and that are suffering with a disability, and they're not getting the proper medical treatment they deserve. And that's all we're asking for. No one's asking for a handout here. No one's asking for special treatment. Just, the most basic things that a first world country like Canada should provide.
Exactly. Well, yeah, thank you so much for just everything that you've shared today. We have an extra just couple of minutes, and while we were off the air, we were talking a bit about poetry and music writing, and I would love to just hear more about that from you, what kind of things you would write poetry about.
Like you, just whatever, we were talking, just to whatever gets off your chest. I actually wrote a song about the workers' compensation system, basically. Unfortunately, I don't have the lyrics in front of me, but it was many years ago. But I write whatever's sort of on my mind, and just that you need to get out, and you just kind of whatever. Same with music, whatever you have. Unfortunately, in the last 8 years, I haven't been able to play very much because of my injury, but it's very painful. I get a few minutes in and it gets very frustrating, but like you, I enjoy music, and any chance that to listen or play to go to concerts or whatever, I'm all for.
Yeah, when you write poetry or music in general, do you abide by a certain rhyme schemes or rhythm, or do you just kind of freestyle more?
We're talking about, so I'm sort of in reverse. I write the music or the poetry sort of first, and then the music sort of comes afterwards. I can kind of have an idea in my head of how it's supposed to sound, and this sounds like a G, or this sounds like an A, this sounds like an F, this sounds like, and I write the music after, around the words, which you were talking about. You're the opposite. You like to write the music first and then do the poetry later, but which that's the normal way. Like I said, I know I do things the opposite, it seems to be the best way. I don't know why I do it that way, but I guess I find it, to me, it's easier to come up with the music, because there's so many different variations of when you play different instruments and sounds you can make. But words, to make it sound right and to make it all coherent, I find that's the most difficult. So I get that out of the way first and write the music and get that off my head. If I need to change or tweak things, I can always do that. But the sounds and the music, that's, you can always improvise. That's the beauty of playing an instrument. Yeah. Improvisation is, you can do, the possibilities are endless.
I know, and I think that's the thing that makes it so hard when you write the words first, because recently I wrote a poem and I was like, this has to be a song. And then I realized there's a million different ways I could sing it and play it. The way that I sing it or make the music for it can totally change the meaning of the lyrics, which is just, it's exciting, but it's also just so infinite. There's so many different things.
Yes, absolutely.
But, we were just about to play our last song, but first, of course, I got to shout out Department Uno, which we'll be playing on the radio after this with your host, Connor. He always is giving you really cool, like, also often firsthand information about the music that he's playing. So that's going to be really exciting. But first, I'm going to play this song called Lonely Road by Natalie Bergman. I've played this on the radio before. It's a really just sweet and lovely song. And yeah, I just want to thank you all who have been listening. If you listened to the whole hour, I appreciate you. And yeah, I'll be back next week. I'm going to be doing a show. It'll just be me, and it'll be electronic music for people who hate electronic music, because that used to be me, but lately I'm making some discoveries. So look forward to that next Friday from 12 to 1. And yeah, have a great rest of your day.